Good evening. I'd like to welcome everybody to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is David, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, David.
For those who care to join us, let's have a moment of silence to do with as you wish, followed by the serenity of prayer. God,
grant us the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that all present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open Big Book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we're talking about step one. Step one is one of the ones that we do in two pieces. Tonight, we're gonna be talking about resentments. And if you come back next week, we'll be talking about fear and sex. So,
I want to talk about sex.
Talk about sex resentments tonight. That'll be fun. Okay, so before we start, I'm really excited to have both of these people. They're two of my favorite people in the world. Bo has come all the way from Texas, and Ashley's come all the way from Virginia Beach. We love them both so much. We're in for a treat. So help me welcome Bo and Ashley, please. So we're going to start on page 63. Quotes, I apologize. Step four is made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves.
Wow.
Page 63. Next, we launched in the course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom, so we had to get down to causes and conditions. Ashley?
I'm Ashley. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Ashley.
And I don't know if you guys normally do this at, or have people do this at their, when they first start talking, but I always like to share my sobriety date and my home group and stuff, so if that's okay. My sobriety date is June 30th, 2003, and my home group used to be Big Book in Ghent, so it's going to feel very weird saying my new home group, but it's Bayside 12-Step Study, and we meet Mondays at 10:30 a.m., and it's an hour-and-a-half meeting, and it really is great. I'm loving it, and so please come visit us sometime. And I have a sponsor, and I sponsor ladies. I actually picked up a new sponsee today at the meeting, so I was very glad for that. Keep me sober. Okay, so step four. When I first came into AA, probably like many of you, I really thought that alcohol was my problem. I thought that if I stopped drinking, all my problems were going to go away, because I thought that the alcohol was what caused me to do all these bad things. Things that I regretted, things I felt shameful for, you know, whatever. And what I found about, I mean, really, if I look back, pretty much ever since I stopped drinking, nothing changed. I was the same person. I was doing the same things. I was still dishonest. I was still in, you know, just kind of chaos and lying and running around and managing and controlling and just everything. My life was still crazy unmanageable. And finally, when I kind of got sick of that life, is when I was willing to make this decision to do this vital and crucial step. And I remember kind of that, I mean, part of it, it was just sort of resignation, surrendering, I guess, finally just being sick and tired of feeling that way and just knowing I need to do something different. And I remember that kind of like being that being sort of a scary place, but also being a little like a door cracked of hope or something, you know, that little sliver of light. I knew there was something different and better, but I knew I basically had to sort of enter this fearlessly. And I was just really fortunate to have sort of God put the right person in front of me at that time. So more to be continued. I'll pass. I could just talk the whole time, but I'll share.
I'm a damn drunk. My name's Bo.
Hey, Bo.
My sobriety date, January 1st, 1987. My home group is the New Life Group in Monahans, Texas. It meets on Monday nights at 8 o'clock. Anytime I get before a podium, I feel it necessary to qualify myself a little bit. I drank a whole hell of a lot more than my share for a whole lot of years. And I played around AA for 11 before I finally settled down and decided to get sober. And when I did, I got down on my knees and asked God for help. And that was all I asked for. And then I went to a meeting that night, and there were two gentlemen that were on either side of me when we said the Lord's Prayer. And I turned and hugged one of them, and he says, "You're going to be all right." And I said, "If you'll be my sponsor." And he agreed to that. And the other gentleman turned and hugged him, and he says, "You got a place to live?" And I said, "No." He said, "Well, I'm going to bring you out to my house for 2 weeks. And we'll get up in the morning when I get up and do the first three steps on our knees. And then I'm going to go to work, and you're going to go find you a job and a place to live." And I was so afraid not to, because I knew that this was my last chance. And I did exactly what he told me. And we did our first three steps on our knees every morning. And I still do it today. And I'm a little bit crippled, and it's kind of hard for me to get down there. But I know damn good and well that if I don't, what I go back to. And as far as the steps, the fourth step and the resentment, mercy. I fought that for a long time. And my sponsor told me, just do what you can now. We'll come back to it, but get as much down as you can. And I did that, and we talked about it, and then we went on through 5, 6, and 7. And it's amazing. I've gone back to my four-step many times. Today I usually do a four-step on my present. And I was thinking on the way out here, and while I was at Wakefield, about, you know, I don't have resentments today. I get angry, but I don't hold on to it. And that's a gift from God. I know that today. I've had all the resentments I need, because I'm afraid the next one might take me back out there. And I'll pass it on for a while.
continue on page 64. Therefore, we started upon a personal inventory. This was step four. A business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. Taking a commercial inventory is a fact-finding and fact-facing process. It's an effort to discover the truth about the stock in trade. One object is to disclose damaged or unsaleable goods to get rid of them promptly and without regret. If the owner of a business is to be successful, he cannot fool himself about values. We did exactly the same thing with our lives. We took stock honestly. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup which caused our failure. Being convinced that self manifested in various ways of what had defeated us, we considered its common manifestations.
Well, I mean, talking about the personal inventory, and I'm sure that it's going to get more into making our list and all that kind of stuff, but as far as that fact-finding and fact-facing process, mine really just started with column one in the book and putting down all my resentments and being able to look at them and see my part in it and not just, and I guess sort of through that, I remember how humbling that was and kind of seeing the same character defects again and again and really thinking I knew I had some part in them, because I know it's not all, I mean, just logically and through life, you know, it's not always everybody else's fault all the time, although I don't know, maybe some of us think that, but at that point I had enough of AA in my head that I didn't think that. But I remember just going through and you know, kind of getting to that last column and seeing selfishness, fear, self-centeredness, whatever, again and again, and just realizing that those were the things that were causing my failure. That feeling of humility is really coming. And I remember putting in the past when I had done other sort of inventories, it was more I had been told to kind of write my whole life history. And I hadn't been told to necessarily do the steps and follow the columns and, you know, do what the book asks us to do. And I think in writing sort of my life history, it was easier for me to get caught up in my tale of woe, as one of our good friends calls it, and just sort of think about the bad things that had happened to me growing up and my life and my family and, you know, just the experience I'd had and how those had shaped me and kept me thinking those external things and the alcohol, those were my issues. And how the steps and the columns are, I think that helped me to really see what the real problem was, and it was me. So
I came to that part of the book and what he said, that I had to do it exactly like it was in the book, and there were so many things that I didn't realize that I had held for so long, deep-seated resentments that had gone way back to my childhood. And when I started writing about those, a lot of stuff come out that I, you know, I didn't even realize that I was holding a resentment over. And one in particular, and I'll share a little bit about it, but I had a brother who's dead now, but he had a load of hay fall on him when he was 18 years old, and he didn't gain anything mentally from then on. He was still an 18-year-old boy when he died at 62. And I was 5 years old when that happened, and I was his best buddy. And then he would go into town, and he'd get drunk, and he'd come back, and he would abuse the hell out of me. And I buried that for years. And by working these steps and working with Woody, I worked through that. And after about 10 years sober, I finally got to go sit at his grave and talk to him and forgive him and forgive myself for holding that resentment all those years. Without this program, I would still be holding that resentment. It's hard to realize that at 40 years old that the resentment you've been holding for so long was against a man that was ill. He was a lot sicker than we are. And here I had stayed away from him. I went to his funeral and wouldn't go up and look at the casket. I went out the back door. I was afraid. Those fears get so bad sometimes that we can't do what we should do. And that's all I've got now.
Okay, continuing on page 64, resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease. For we have not only been mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. We listed the people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. We asked ourselves why we were angry. In most cases, we found it was our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relationships, including sex, which were hurt or threatened. So we were sore, we were burned up. On our grudge list, we set opposite each name our injuries. Was it our self-esteem, our security, our ambitions, our personal or sex relations which had been interfered with? Ash? Sorry.
So when I was doing my list, kind of like I was talking about before, I remember the first time when I, did any kind of grudge list or whatever. I just wanted to put down enough that I would kind of get my sponsor off my back. But this time when I was, and let her think that I, kind of did it, basically have her stop talking to me about it, essentially. But this time when I did it, and when I do it now, it's really, I want to work through what I have. I want to be like, oh, I don't want to carry around resentments. I want to be able to let stuff go. Sure, to maybe angry for a moment, a day, or two or three, but then to really just move on. But so I remember just having that willingness and sort of that desperation and sitting there thinking, there's got to be more, who else? And driving around kind of thinking about these things and wanting to go home and put them on the list when I got there, because that's how thorough I wanted to be, because I had been told and seen from other people who had good recovery and who were spiritually healthy. I know that that's how they did it, that it was so thorough and it was honest. And so that's what I wanted on my list. And I remember even, I had a lot of people, but I remember being really intrigued by institutions or principles, and kind of like, what would be the institutions I could put? And I remember putting like the institution of marriage, because I wasn't married and I wanted to be married, and why did I want this so much? And God damn it, and honesty, like the principle of honesty. And I remember kind of inventorying that and how interesting it was. How can somebody be resentful against honesty? But I was just pissed that I had to be honest, and that I remember seeing other people that friends of mine, and I felt maybe they're spiritually sick too, although not alcoholic, but I saw all these people getting away with all this stuff. And why did I have to do this? Why did I have to? I mean, AA should have been on it. The stuff should have been on my resentment list. Because, like, why did I have to do this just to be normal, is what I thought. And now I realize I have a huge advantage over most people. I mean, really, most people I know, I wish everybody had this. I was talking to somebody the other day about if our whole world was in recovery, how different would it be? It'd be amazing. We wouldn't have nearly as many problems as we do. But yeah, this thing about what was affected. So in every case, obviously something that I wanted, this resentment was driven by either I wasn't getting what I thought I wanted, or I thought I was going to lose something that I had, that type of thing. So yeah, I love that. I'm an orderly person and organized. So when somebody directed me to the book and the columns, I was off to go, ready to go.
I hated columns and books. It just amazes me now to look back at how I look at this part of the step. And, when I got over there to where it was saying how it affected me, all of the above, the fear, the anxiety, the self-centeredness, the selfishness, all of those things was on every column, on every list. And I can't really talk without talking about my sponsor. I love him to death. And I have two sponsors now. I have one here and I have one in Texas. And the gentleman that I have in Texas is 85 years old with 38 years sober. And he don't take no shit. And he tells me, whatever you're thinking about, whatever's going on, is in God's hands. Let it go. And I say, but I haven't dealt with it yet. He says, no, you're trying to eat it. It's not going to get any better. Let it go. And he's an old Spanish gentleman. Sometimes I can't always understand the way he talks. My Spanish has gone south many years ago. And he'll get off on a tangent in Spanish, and I'll say, wait a minute, Jimmy, wait a minute. Let's talk in English, because I don't understand what you're saying. He'll say, yeah, you do, you just don't realize it. Shut up. But that letting go of those things that for years I had held on to, it was amazing that the relief that I had. And even in the beginning, you know, the letting go, the relief. And I used to tell my sponsees, and I have two sponsors and a couple of sponsees right now, and I tell them, you know, why wouldn't you want to do this? Why would you hesitate to get better? Because it's so much better to live this way. It's so much better to not go to bed at night with a whole bunch of bull in your head. Lay your head on a pillow and go to sleep. And thank God for it. Thank you.
Where are we?
Okay, page 65, we went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. The first thing apparent was that this world and its people were often quite wrong. To conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us, and we stayed sore. Sometimes it was remorse, and we were sore at ourselves. But the more that we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived.
Well, I guess I already touched on the thoroughness part. And the part I guess it jumps out at me in this reading is the part about being sore to ourselves. I had a lot of remorse. And not to say that, you know, I didn't think people had wronged me. There were certainly cases where I thought, you know, times where I thought that was the case. And you know, that drove my resentments for sure. But I really lived with a lot of regret and remorse and shame and, you know, maybe like a lot of people, but especially when I share with other women about sort of where alcohol took me, it definitely just made me feel like really bad about myself. And it affected my relationship with my higher power too, because I never had any hang-ups with God. I didn't have my parents shove religion down my throat, yet it was kind of a part of our lives and my upbringing. And so I thought God was good, you know, so I didn't have any problems there. But you know, long enough into my drinking career and the things that I kept doing and sort of trying to fight it and doing the same thing over and over and sort of just continuing to live the way I was, I thought God didn't want anything to do with me. And I think that's what kind of kept me from, for a long time, from asking for help, you know, and kind of maybe getting on track sooner, although I was lucky to get sober pretty young. And then just, and maybe we'll get into this later too in this reading, but that whole thing about fighting, you know, the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. And that was definitely the case then, and it's the case now. I mean, in a spat with my spouse, I mean, the more I just have to have him see my point and why I did it this way and that kind of thing, just explaining and defending, and those are the two words that he probably uses about me the most in our disagreements is, why do you always have to explain yourself? Why do you always have to defend yourself? It doesn't matter. It is what it is. You know, let's just move on. And just But I just have to, and I have to be right, you know, because, so, yes, I'm still working on this. But, yeah, it makes matters worse, and I only seem to win, you know, and my moments of triumph will be short-lived. I mean, I can put that into my life right now, you know, anytime I'm trying to fight anything. And, you know, it says we have to cease fighting everyone and everything. If we don't want, it kills us. And because I think when we fight and fight, that's where the resentment starts to bud and grow and fester. And then here we are back to what's our solution, drinking. So.
Yeah, man. When David told me that Ashley and I were going to be sharing the podium, it was a joy. It was so exciting because Ashley and I have been friends for a long time. And I caused a few resentments in her life, I'm sure. And I think we've pretty well passed that. But I didn't like me when I got here. You know, you guys were all right, but I didn't like me. And during the 60s and 70s, if you spent any time in the Norfolk area in the bars, most of the mirrors were rusted in the bathrooms. I would walk into the bathroom and see myself, and I'd bust the damn mirror because I didn't like who I was looking at. And it's been a hell of a long time since I've busted a mirror. And it's because of this part of the steps, this part of the cleansing, the letting go, and the sharing with another person exactly what's going on in your life and what's going on in the past is Johnny Cash did a movie about a pool player that was a hustler, and he ran into his own son, and the first thing they did was went to a spa, and they spent a lot of time in the spa relaxing and getting ready for this tournament. And this cleansing that we get from step 4 and 5 is just like taking a spa treatment. It's so wonderful that when we get through it, we feel so good, and life starts changing. And those changes are unbelievable. And if you haven't done it yet, why?
Page 66, it is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile? But the alcoholic, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal. For when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns, and we drink again. And with us, to drink is to die. If we were to live, we had to be free of anger. The grouch and the brainstorm were not for us. They may be the dubious luxuries of other men, but for alcoholics, these things are poison.
Well, this is a little bit what I was talking about, that just, I'm not allowed to be angry. I can't hold on to stuff. I love that line, you know, when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. I remember that phrase, sunlight of the spirit, going to a retreat with some ladies, and we all put topics in the basket, and mine was kind of, how do you hold on to the sunlight of the spirit? And I think it was just when I was first reading the big book, before I really studied it, I just thought that was such a cool phrase, but now I really still hang on to it, and I know the answer now is, do your inventory, don't hold on to anger and resentment, you know. Continue to work the steps. And in this line too, I love how it sort of separates the insanity of alcohol returns and we drink again. It's that insanity comes before we pick up the drink. And, you know, and there have been times that I have been fighting everyone and everything, and, you know, even I have a inventory that's needs to be completed, and from a anger storm I had last week involving family members, and just and I was definitely the grouch in the brainstorm, and you know, and I left that situation, and I kind of made a quick amend, so I can continue in life, but I know I need to look at it further. But that just that not being able to go to bed happy, joyous, and free of resentments, I mean, I just, that doesn't happen to me very often. I don't have a lot of regrets. I, you know, I'm lucky. I kind of feel like I try to do the right thing most of the time. I treat people pretty well. I don't get caught up in a lot of BS. I sort of run from drama now. When I used to have, all my friends were drama queens or kings, guys and girls, and I loved that, and I love being in the middle of it, and I love trying to fix it. Now I find myself more and more hanging out with the healthy people, you know, which is really great, and it makes life so much easier, you know. A bit dubious. I mean, a dubious luxury. I think that's kind of interesting words, because it's, I mean, dubious makes me think kind of like, I don't know, dangerous, precarious, you know, it's not really a luxury, so I don't think anybody should really hold on to that, but, anyway, you don't need this, do you?
Nah.
You never get mad no more, do you, Bob?
I can't read it from here anyway. Yeah, I always wanted that sunlight of the Spirit, but I didn't know how to get it. I remember as a child, we were way out in the country, and our entertainment was to get together on Saturday nights and go to one of the neighbor's houses, and the whole neighborhood would show up, and we'd play and have a good time, and I was too little. And the older kids wouldn't let me play with them, so I would sit around and snuggle up just as close as I could to my dad and listen to these older men talking and everything. And it seemed like just about every week there would be someone had passed away, and they would talk about how nice a man he was, how kind he was, how always there for anybody that needed any help and everything. And I always thought, when I die, that's what I wanted to say about me. You know, and I didn't know how to make that happen. And it just tore me up because I wanted it so bad. And, you know, I haven't been a big churchgoer or anything like this. And I fought God for years. When I was a senior in high school, I had three very close friends die violent deaths. And I went to their funerals, and what I heard at the funerals was, they got next to God before they died, and I thought, I'm going to stay as far away from that sucker as I can, you know. And then I came in here, and you people were smiling and loving me and sharing with me, and I saw that it could be done, you know. And when I got through these steps and got to where I could go out and help someone else, give a little bit back, I started seeing that sunlight of the Spirit coming in more and more. And the more I do it, the better it is. And believe me, I love this program and everything it's given me. Thank you.
Thanks, Bob. We're going to continue on page 66. We turn back to the list. You've got to have a list to turn back to, right? We turn back to the list, for it held the key to the future. We are prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. We began to see that this world and its people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had the power to actually kill. How could we escape? We saw these resentments must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. This was our course. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Though we did not like their symptoms and the way they disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. We asked God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, "This is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done." We avoid retaliation or argument. We wouldn't treat sick people that way. If we do, we destroy our chance of being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will help us show them, but at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one.
I love this kind of anger prayer, or help me from being angry prayer. I do use it a lot, and I also kind of, and this is maybe from one of the stories in the back of the book where it's somebody in the story, I guess somebody had told him or her to pray for somebody who you're resentful at. And I think in the book, in the story, it says, you know, for 30 days or 2 weeks or whatever it said. I think around here we talk about doing it for 30 days, but that really works. In the moment, I mean, I guess what I was thinking of when David was reading was just kind of those quick bursts of anger or things that, just being in situations, I was just picturing things that would happen. And for me, for the most part, because when I got sober, I lived by myself and I wasn't married and I didn't have a boyfriend and, you know, I didn't really have anybody. My workplace was a place that I had to deal with this stuff the most. And so in the beginning, what I did, well, in the beginning, I participated in all the craziness and, you know, gossip and bitching and anger and, you know, whatever. And then when I started to get a little bit of recovery in me, the best I could do was just walk away and go hide in my office. And fortunately, I had my own office with the door that would shut. And I, for a while, I mean, I really felt like a hermit. And I was just hiding, running away. And eventually I said, okay, I'm going to have to learn how to deal with these people. And I'm going to have to, not these people, but people in general. I'm going to have to learn how to live in this world. You know? So it wasn't them. Nobody in my office was any bad or anything. And my family is great to practice this with my family. You know, this is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? But that whole thing, like, just God save me from being angry, and how can I be helpful to other people? And that's my prayer every morning. Not save me from being angry, but how can I be of service to you and those around me? You know, how, use me, help me to carry this message. And then just like I was talking about, and I'm working on this. I mean, I don't mean to say any of this. Please don't think I'm perfect by any stretch. I mean, I'll go out in the parking lot and somebody will piss me off and I'll, you know, just kidding, cut you off. No, but like the whole, we avoid retaliation or argument. I mean, like with my spouse, I'm getting better at that. You know, just, I can't argue. I can't, obviously I'm not going to retaliate against him, but, you know, I can't argue. I can't defend and blame and, you know, just argue. It doesn't work. What I found is the only person that gets burned up and pissed off is me. You know, I'm the one that walks around anytime, any situation, any argument, any disagreement, the other person is fine. I'm the one that holds on to it and stews about it. And that's what they talk about with resentments, you know, taking poison, expecting the other person to die. And I'll share this kind of funny little story that apparently I was doing something wrong driving the other day. And I need to be careful because, you know, I don't get on my cell phone and text and do all that kind of stuff. But my daughter is a big distraction. One, because she's super cute and I'm looking at her, constantly looking at her in the rearview mirror. And two, I mean, she needs stuff sometimes and I'm reaching around trying to give something to her. And I think I was following somebody too closely in the neighborhood or something, heading to my mother-in-law's the other day. And this lady slowed down real far in front of me and flipped me off and did all this stuff. And I was kind of, holy crud, what did I do, you know? And then I was like, well, I'm sure I did something. I know it was my fault. So I wasn't upset, but I was kind of pissed that she was getting so angry. And so we pull up, and I have the opportunity to be side by side with her. And my first thing was, oh, just stay back. And, you know, I'm like, no. And then I pull forward, and part of me was, my instinct said, oh, you know, flip her off too and be me. And I pulled up, and it was a God thing, I think. I had prayed that morning, thank God. I pulled up, and I looked over at her, and she, like, went and kind of flashed some fangs at me or something. It was so weird. And I just smiled, and I go, smiled and waved. And she did not know what to do with herself. And I thought, wow, that is growth. Because, I'm sorry, I know it's a little potential road rage situation, and it's not some big issue with, you know, sponsees or spouses or whatever. But, I mean, that's just, I went through the light when it turned green, and I just drove down the road to my mother-in-law's, and I felt light, and I thought it was funny. I actually haven't shared it to anybody, so I'm glad to share with you guys. But I just thought, wow, that's what I need to do, you know, with any potential argument. Not necessarily smile and give him a big grin, but with that same attitude is how I can handle other conflicts in life. I don't have to go at it fighting and trying to get my way and trying to be right and all that. It can be, oh, let's just be happy. Let's, you know, let's figure this out. So.
Yeah. I key in on the point that this disease kills, and it's the resentments that's going to end up doing the killing. And I worked as a counselor for a while, and I wasn't very good at it. That's why I quit. But I worked with this young man. I met him the first time in his basement. They asked me to go out and talk to him. And he was 15 years old, living in his basement under house arrest until he was 18, and they were going to try him as an adult for 3 counts of manslaughter in a blackout. He didn't even know when he woke up in jail why he was there. And so this disease kills a lot more than just us. You know, there's a lot of people that have died in auto accidents and shootings and knifings and everything else because of anger. Somebody gets angry at somebody, and they're going to defend themselves, and somebody gets hurt. And to stay away from that is such a godsend. I rent property out quite a bit, and sometimes the people don't have the money to pay me whenever it's time. And I could get very angry about that and raise all kinds of hell. And my very dear friend Paul tells me, you know, we were in that shape once. Maybe there's a reason for it. Let's give them a little time. You know, this being gentle part, I didn't know what that was all about. And today I do. You know, you can be gentle with anyone. You can care about anyone. And, you know, I'd like to tell you I'm that way all the time. Sure. But I get pissed off on the road. I've flipped a few people off in my time. But the thing is, today I have the tools to stop and look. You know, God allows us to look at ourselves and to say, you know, would I want to be like that person? Would I want to act like that person is acting? And I don't want to do that no more. It's not fun. I have a grandson that's 9 years old, and he plays football, and he's doing pretty good at it. And the other day he called me, and he said, "Grandpa, I sacked the quarterback twice." And I says, "Well, why are you doing that?" And he says, "Because it's fun." I love stuff like that. You know, I love my grandchildren today. I can share with them. And I can share with them without allowing my feelings to get involved in it, my anger. If I've just been run off the road or something by somebody, I don't take that to them. I give them the love that they deserve. And I don't know. I like to give you guys that kind of love. Okay.
Thanks, Bo. All right, our final paragraph on page 67 deals with the mysterious fourth column of your inventory. And it says as follows, referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others have done, we resolutely look for our own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Though a situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other man's. We saw our faults and we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly and were willing to set these matters straight.
For me, when I did this, I had never looked at anything like this before. And what I kept in every resentment, there was always I always had a part. I always had a place where I was wrong. And every time I was selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, frightened, and almost all four of those in every instance. But I think the ones for me that, or the one really that came up most frequently was dishonesty. And it wasn't that I always lied about something, but I was dishonest with my motives. I was dishonest with, you know, why I was really in a situation. I was trying to get something out of it. I guess I was self-seeking too. But I had never looked at it that way. I had never looked at, you know, I'd always thought, you know, this person didn't treat me right, and I never really, or this person wronged me, or that person dumped me, or, you know, whatever. It was always kind of what they had done to me, and maybe it had been wrong. Maybe, you know, they broke with me through an email. Yeah, that's pretty crappy, you know, with a long-term relationship. But, you know, what had I done? You know, how had I treated this person? You know, what was my part in it? So, again, I mean, the whole fourth-step process for me was just a huge dose of humility. And really just being able to see that it wasn't always somebody else's fault, you know, and that even if something, even if it was kind of equal weighted, I had stuff to work on, and I had ways that I could live differently. And the part about, you know, we put it before us in black and white. There's plenty of times now where I feel like I can just do the inventory in my head. You know, I'm just going to think it through, and then I'm going to call my sponsor. And I tell my sponsees, there is some, and I agree with it too, but I tell them, I don't care if you even read it to me over the phone, but I want it pen to paper, because there is something powerful about looking at it in black and white and seeing it, and kind of something about the mind-heart connection or something. I mean, there probably is some scientific study about it, but it really did make me kind of internalize, I don't know, the feeling that I got from it. Really, it really sunk in, kind of, that it really brought me right size. And I say humility, but maybe humbling and a little, maybe tiny bit humiliating in a way. It really just let me see that the crap that I was really doing, and the person I become. And I remember sort of feeling sort of sad about that. And I'm skipping ahead, I'm sorry, to step five, but I remember when I shared that with my sponsor, I remember just kind of like, it did feel good to let somebody know sort of the real me, and to have, and then be able to share that with other women, you know, over months and years and stuff. But then to have somebody still love me, knowing all that dirt and yuckiness and selfishness and all that. And like everybody says with this step too, and for them to share that with me also, and know that guess what? We're all broken. We all make mistakes. We're human. But it doesn't mean that, I mean, with a fatal malady of the disease, it doesn't mean we have to put a gun to our head. It doesn't mean that we have to keep drinking till our deaths. You know, like, there is hope, and we can get better, and, you know, there is a way out. And for me, it's through these steps and through this action.
Thanks, Ash.
I can't tell you how good it is to sit beside Ashley. And, you know, whenever we get to that fourth column, we have to look at everything all of a sudden and say, okay, what's my part in this? And why am I feeling this way? And in nearly every case, in my limited ability, I saw that it all slid back into fear. I was afraid of life. I was afraid of you. I was afraid of getting out in the street. And the thing was, I covered all that up with bravado. I tried to show everybody that I was the big man. I was the toughie. I once worked in a nightclub in Minneapolis as the bouncer, and it was one of the worst nightclubs in Minneapolis. There was always a fight going on somewhere. And I'll tell you a quick story, and then I'll go on with it. The owner of the place said, whenever he hired me, he says, whatever you do, try to get them outside. If there's a problem, try to get them outside. And we had a three-way fight start in the middle of the dance floor. And I'm heading for the door, doing everything I can to get them out the door. And they went. And I was so proud of myself. And I walked outside and I looked. And man, it was, they were going to their cars. They were done. And I thought, wow. look at Bo. I turned around, there's two bartenders standing there with cue sticks. I hadn't done anything. But I lived in that fear for years. And it's such a relief to not have that fear. To be able to give it away. To be able to talk to another person about it. And hear their experiences. You know, I tell the guys that I work with that, you know, fear is there. You're going to have it no matter what. But it doesn't have to take you down. You can deal with it. You can give it away even. God will take it. Thank you.
Thank you both. All right, we are at the end of the sharing portion of the meeting. We're going to pass the seven tradition basket. Seven tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Oh, I'm the one who's talking. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seven tradition is essential at every level of AA services, both the privilege and the responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Are there any announcements tonight for the good of AA?
If you don't drink, you won't get drunk.
Thanks, Bo. Kyle, nice and loud, brother.
My name's Kyle, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Kyle.
Hey, Kyle. In 2 weeks, there is a group of us being in the Nancy, Virginia, to start a new young people's conference called Energy Pop in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. There's a good number of us from the beginning of the area heading out there. So if you're interested in joining the caravan, please talk to me after the meeting. It's going to be December 10th in the Nancy, Virginia Club Hope at 2 p.m. Then also, end of the month is the Virginia State Conference of Young People in AA. It's $25 to register now, $40 at the door, $69 for the room rates per night. And there's going to be hiking, and there's going to be open mics, karaoke, and there's going to be awesome panelists, and it's going to be fun. It's out in Winchester, Virginia, which is like a sober town. And we'll see how we can just show up. So anyway, if you're interested in any of that, please talk to me.
Thanks, Kyle.
Thanks, Kyle.
Going to be in this room on Friday, October 16th, and Saturday, October 17th. So it's coming up in just a few weeks. We're going to have Jerry W. from Raleigh and Rich B. from Ocean City, Maryland. Fantastic speakers. It's going to start in this room at 6:30 on Friday night. We'll have a couple of meetings that night, adjourn at 9:30, and then we'll be back in the morning, Saturday morning, October 17th at 9 a.m. There'll be a potluck lunch on Saturday, so please bring a dish if you wish. This event is open to all. There is no registration fee or charge of any kind. Pick up these lovely pumpkin-colored flyers on your way out, and if you would, take them back to your groups and help us get the word out there. That'd be great. Did I mention it was free? Okay. All right. Simple Actions Group is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting, home group members. And newcomers, you're the reason we're here. Is there anybody here tonight in your first 30 days of sobriety? If we could just get your first name so that we could welcome you, we'd like to do that.
Justin, alcoholic.
Justin. Welcome. Glad you're here.
Hi, David. Welcome.
Welcome.
Shannon. Hi, Shannon.
Welcome.
Kevin. Hi, Kevin.
Kevin. Welcome.
Hi, Patrice.
Welcome. Anybody else? Please don't run out after the Lord's Prayer. Stay and let somebody talk to you. Pardon? We have literature available. I think it's over there. Please see any home group member. Basically, if you can fold it, it's free. The books we sell at our cost. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we have a couple of home group members, Stephanie and Evan, will be up here at the front of the room after the meeting. If you'd like to come and talk to them, ask them a question, please feel free to do so. Reminders, smokers, please use the butt cans provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. There are other people using the facility. We're trying to allow them to walk in and out of their building without walking through a cloud of smoke. All of our meetings are audio recorded, and upcoming events are posted on the website, simpleactions.net. So, could we thank Bo and Ashley one more time? And feel free to come up and thank them in person after the meeting. I'd like to thank everybody who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting, after the meeting, which is going to be held at Plaza del Sol, a lovely Mexican boutique restaurant on the corner of 22nd and Colonial. Yeah, that's that. And Evan, would you read the last two paragraphs on page 164, please?
Sure. My name is Evan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Evan.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize that we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. It's obvious. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourselves to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thank you.
Amen.
Thank you.
Thanks, man.
Is that recorded?
Okay.
I think so.
That was one of my anxieties.
Just one?
Yeah.
Our Father.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, power and glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Thank you so much.
My two favorite warm-up.
Oh my God. You're